Adam Wakefield, good to see you. Thanks for coming over.
Hey, thanks for having me here, man. You got a cool spot.
Let me start by saying I've seen you play bluegrass, and I've seen you play electric country soul. So which is it? Or it can be both, can't it?
Man, well, you know, if I was, I mean, you know, I ain't a spring chicken, so I kind of delved in all sorts of different things, especially, you know, especially having a 35-year career of relatively unsuccessful career thing.
Did you just say 35?
Yeah. Well, I'm 37.
Okay. So career started at 2 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I mean, since I've been playing music since I was, I mean, shoot, four. I probably played out with my first band. It was like kind of a Lynyrd Skynyrd band. And like when I was 13, probably. So, you know, it just, you do something for long enough for me, and, you know, I just, like, jump in head first, learn everything I can about it, and then eventually, once I've kind of it's run its course, I just move on to something else. So when I moved to Nashville about 6 years ago, I just dove head first into bluegrass music because it was kind of the last thing on the list of things that I, you know, had gotten into.
How about that? You're from New Hampshire originally.
Uh-huh.
How did Southern music, roots music, kind of, what was the bridge that reached you there?
My parents, mainly. Both just kind of from the hippie generation, both went to Woodstock, whole deal. So, you know, we grew up, I grew up in the middle of nowhere across the street from a farm and, you know, we were relatively poor at that point. So we had a piano, some records, and that was about it. So we just, you know, every morning we'd sit around, put vinyl on and, listen to, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash, James Taylor, you know, and then a bunch of rock stuff, Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Marshall Tucker. And then we listen, you know, a lot of songwriter stuff too, John Prine and Willie Nelson and stuff like that too.
Tell me about the chapters when you began to kind of follow the influences of your influences and sort of find what some of the earliest roots music sounded like and if it affected you or if you ever did that journey.
Yeah, I did actually. I think it's pretty common.
Yeah, it is.
For, especially for musicians, maybe more so than songwriters, but, I mean, I was listening to Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker and stuff like that when I was younger because my parents had had the records, but I didn't really get into it. Like, I was listening to it, but I wasn't trying to emulate it or you know, kind of pull it into my toolbox per se until later on when I really got, you know, I mean, I was obsessed and still am with the Allman Brothers. You know, I thought they were just the greatest band of all time. And so I was just into it. I was into Greg Allman. I wanted to know, you know, I wanted to sound like Greg Allman. I didn't, you know, I wanted to figure out how do I not sing like a white guy? So I, you know, went back through, you know, he listened to a lot of Bobby Bland and B.B. King. And so I went back through that and then just kind of just kept going back and really, you know, got to the point where I was learning, you know, Muddy Waters tunes from the Plantation recordings. And so that's, you know, that's about as far back as I think I probably could go. Learned a bunch of gospel music too.
I think you and I share something about the Allman Brothers love, which is that not only was it extremely groovy and soulful and brilliant songwriting, but there's that wonderful instrumental and arrange component that's sort of smart. I know you studied jazz piano.
Yep.
So the instrumental side and the thought they put into that, it was a perfect marriage, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, you know, if I think about, all right, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna get high, maybe eat a little bit of mushrooms. What is my perfect music for that? And there's so much music out there geared towards that state of mind. And I always, you know, I always thought the Allman Brothers were it, man. You know, like they had great songs, great singing, and they had jams that just went places. You know, they had, they were. You know, their jam sections were like classical music almost, like through pieces, whereas so much of the other stuff, you know, even though I listened to plenty of Phish and Moe and all those other jam bands, they never hit it on the head for me like the Allman Brothers did.
Fair enough. You, what did you do and how far did you go in the piano formal schooling? I believe you went to New York and got started at least in a formal training.
So I took lessons since I was four. And then ended up doing private lessons when I was in high school. My mom would drive me an hour to the closest city, which was Concord, New Hampshire.
Concord.
Yep. Drove me over there once a week, an hour both ways to do lessons. And then I ended up going to the new school, went to their jazz contemporary arts program.
Wow. There
and went for a year. Learned a lot. Got much better at my instrument, much more proficient. And it was really just kind of a year for me to get better at playing keyboards, better at singing. That was really when I first started focusing on singing because I took a sight singing course.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And it was so hard, so unbelievably hard. And but
for folks, that means you're like looking at staff written notes and you have to find it out of the air, not with a guide.
Right. No, I mean, no instrument, no nothing. You just have to sing the notes,
see the intervals, you know? And know them.
And yeah. that was when I first figured out that's the best way for me to develop my ears to be able to do that. Oh. And so everybody hated the sight singing courses, hated it because it was so hard. I loved it because I was just like, I'm always looking for something that's really hard to get better at. And so that was what I got into, and that was my kind of jump off point for learning how to sing was, if I can sing all these notes, well then I can sing them in tune, and then I can, and if I can sing the notes that I'm thinking of when I'm playing, that kind of gives me a leg up on a lot of singers because a lot of singers sing by ear.
Then you went to Balmer,
yep.
In a band that was, I guess, pretty eclectic, right?
Yeah, we had, so it was me, a bunch of buddies from New Hampshire. When I left school after a year, I kind of called, my brother had been living in Baltimore, and so I called him up. He wasn't really doing much, and, I felt bad for him, because he was always in bands and everything, and then he moved to Baltimore with his girlfriend. He didn't have anything musical going on, and I was in school, and I didn't really know if I wanted to necessarily start a rock band or anything, but I figured my brother wasn't doing anything, and I figured I'd go down there and kind of kill two birds with one stone. So we started a band, a bunch of friends from New Hampshire, and we just kind of cut our teeth in Baltimore for about 10 years.
Yeah, and a working band. You toured, you played locally.
Yeah, we did everything. Serious. I mean, and it was we didn't have, for the most part, had zero help on any fronts, management wise, booking wise.
Yeah.
We got a lot of love from radio stations. We had some great fans. We played some great shows and all that good stuff, but it was 10 years of me just working a full-time job and then managing the band myself, booking the band myself.
Mm.
I mean, doing all the things, which is good. It was good. It was good prep for me to get here,
Tell me a little more about that. In what way? What do you think you strengthened and worked on?
I mean, I think for the most part, it was musically. It took me a really long time to get to a point where I was confident enough in my singing to, not cringe every time I heard it played back to me.
And wow.
There's a lot of people, I talked to a lot of people and they're like, man, you must have just been singing great, singing since you were a kid. And I was like, man, I sounded terrible for a really long time. I mean, there are VHS tapes of us playing that if they ever got out, I would spend everything in my bank account to get them suppressed. I mean, they're really bad. And, I'm not one of those like innate talent, God-given talent stories. I'm one of those sitting in my basement every day for hours on end, singing and singing and singing and singing until, I've kind of just practiced out all the bad notes,
I've heard you describe that you actually would sort of focus in on a particular vocalist and kind of use that artist to emulate and to zero in on a style and try mm-hmm. things and then move on to somebody else. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. The more I talk to singers, the more I've found that it's more unique to me than a lot of folks.
Yeah.
A lot of folks I just sing. This is what I sound like. For me, that wasn't it at all. When I just, quote unquote, sang, it sounded terrible. So I needed to figure out what I wanted to sound like. And so I just started emulating, first it was Greg Allman, and then it was Bobby Bland, and then it was B.B. King, and then it was Ray Charles, and then it was Donny Hathaway and Stevie Wonder. And then, kind of once I got off of that kick, I started moving on to, some of the other like folk artists like John Prine and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Once I'd figured out how to not sound completely hokey singing, then I kind of started reintroducing some of the other, some of the more folk and rock oriented stuff.
I think that's actually wonderful. I think that gives, people cause for some kind of hope that, or some confidence that singing is something that can be learned and focused on. like any other instrument. And there's every reason to believe that it is. There's no reason to believe that it's not, you know, an instrument's an instrument.
Yeah.
And you got to master it.
It's just like everything else. And I think my, you know, it's funny, like a lot of people will give me like the comparison to Chris Stapleton or, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, well, I sound a lot like Chris Stapleton when I'm singing songs, you know, when I'm singing country soul songs, because he's been a big influence for me mm-hmm. on that sort of genre. But it's, you know, and a lot of people are like, oh, you know, if you have the way you sing is the way you sing. And if you sing differently, you know, it's like contrived and insincere. And for me, it doesn't feel like that. I mean, you know, if I'm going to sing a soul tune, if I'm going to sing a Memphis soul song, I'm going to sound more like Al Green than I will sound like Chris Stapleton. But if I'm going to sing, you know, a Willie Nelson song, I'll probably sound more like Chris Stapleton than I will sound like Al Green. So it's, you know, it's, mm-hmm. I think for people to say, it's really not about how, you know, how sincere or whether it's your true sound or not. I think it's just more about doing your homework, you know?
Right on. Well, speaking of your voice, you were on The Voice.
I was, yeah.
And I just love to hear the story because it apparently, I didn't realize it worked this way, but somebody from a producer heard you singing here in Nashville.
Yeah, one of the I guess like talent scout / producer people. There's probably a handful of them in Nashville. I was singing at Soulshine in Midtown before it closed down with my bluegrass band. We played there every Tuesday for, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10s of people. The patio was open, so it went out into Midtown. And honestly, half the reason we played there was just because we were happy to make it so there was bluegrass music in the air in Midtown and not just, you know, drinking my hand. One of the producers came by, heard me singing from the street, and came in and was like, hey, what do you want? You know, you want to audition? And I was like, sure. And I'd already auditioned, I think, 3 or 4 times before that.
And
never made it on. And I'd always sang like soul music, like, you know, like Stevie Wonder songs, Donny Hathaway songs and stuff like that. Never made it. And I was like, all right, I'm making it on there this time. So I went and bought a, you know, cowboy hat, some boots, and walked in and was like, I'm from Nashville, y'all. Here you go. And, you know, I sang a Luke Bryan song, and I sang a Chris Stapleton song, and I think I sang a James Brown song, too.
Wow, all right.
And I was just like, there you go. And it was really just me telling them, like, look, I'll play ball, whatever you want me to be. Want me to be the country guy from Nashville? Great. You want me to be the, like, blue-eyed soul guy? I can do that, too. I really don't care. I just, you know, whatever you guys want, I don't really care.
Huh. Do you think that nonchalance, in a way, helped loosen you up? Do you think that you did a better job because of that? Like, at this point...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't really all that nervous just because I'd been told no so many times that I was prepared for it. But I think, I think at the end of the day, the reason why, you know, the thing that really helped me get onto the show is the fact that, you know, I mean, I walked in there and there were so many other, you know, guys in there who are country singers going into audition. And I was like, God, there's so many of these people. I'm never, you know, what's the chances of me beating out all these guys to get a callback? And the reality of it was really high because we're at a point right now where mainstream country singers, they're not focusing on being great vocalists anymore. And so that was what saved me was that, you know, I could go in and have the look, but I can also, you know, it's a singing show. So, you know, you need to be able to be somewhat more multifaceted than singing 3-note melody lines, which is pretty much what most mainstream country music is nowadays.
What did you make of and observe about the production of the show and the apparatus and the scale and the budget and the audience and the stars and the sheet, just the whole kind of vibe of it must have been fascinating. A few of us get to see kind of what that operation is like.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea how Hollywood worked or any of that. It was, man, I got nothing bad to say about that show. And I mean, you know me, I'm an honest guy. If I did, I'd say it, but mm-hmm. I really don't. I mean, there were people I worked with are so great, so cool, really chill. You know, I was the first one they let, when I got in there, you know, normally when you record your songs, the band records and then the vocalist comes in and sings over top of the band. And I was like, man, I got some arrangement ideas and I'd really like to play the keyboard parts if I could. And there's some guitar parts I'd like to play, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, since, you know, and I tried to be as easy to work with as possible. I was the first, contestant they let track with the band and work with the band and go in before I went, you know, before you went in with your vocal stuff. So they, nice. I mean, they were just really cool, man. And they were really, you know, really open to new ideas. And so that was, I mean, so much fun and being able to interact with those guys and you know, just honestly, the relationships I made from the musicians I met on the show, like Janae Fleener, you know, me and her play together all the time now, and I never would have met her or worked with her if I hadn't been for that show.
Right, cool. What was it like feeling you would have been hearing from new fans in larger numbers, people scattered across the country, not mm-hmm. just where you'd been as a musician with the van, right?
Mm-hmm.
And starting to kind of get a sense of what it would be, what it has to be like to be a successful artist and that widespread relationship. And tell me a little about that.
Yeah, it's I tried to be realistic and, you know, it's tough when you get to those shows and, you know, you got all these people waiting on you hand and foot and whisking you around and you're doing interviews and you're doing all this stuff. It's really easy to get caught up in it and be like, oh, I'm a big star. I'm going to be big after this is over, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I wanted to be, you know, I knew, I was like, you know, you just look at the numbers, how many people have been on the show, how many people have, had successful careers after The Voice, and the number in a nutshell is zero. So, as much as cool as you feel like when you're doing the show, you have to be realistic about what this means for you as an artist, as a career when you get done. And so when I was on the show, I was already talking to people in Nashville, talking to my friends who could help me out, talking to people in social media, stuff like that, you know, digital or whatever, to help me out, because I knew when I got done, I'd have to capitalize on, you know, the amount of success. And that's the thing about the show, is that it'll help you in certain ways and won't help you in other ways, mm-hmm. you know. So, like, you'll get more Facebook fans, you'll get more reach, you'll have a bigger social media presence, but as far as like having labels looking at you seriously, or, you know, booking agencies, people like that, you know, they'll hop on for a little bit and be like, yeah, all right, here we go. We'll book you a bunch of, you know, high paying corporate gigs or stuff like that, or festivals or anything. But, you know, I knew after about a year, just like with everybody else, all the Voice stuff was going to go away. And so I tried to just take that first year when I got done to really, you know, grab the bull by the horns, figure out what I wanted to do musically and at least get the music done for it. So by the time all that Voice stuff had kind of died away, I had something left to work with.
Specifically these songs on Gods and Ghosts, is that what you're talking about?
That would definitely be in the category of things, you know, things left to work with. And mm-hmm. And that was the other thing too, is it was a big transition moving from being a Voice guy to being just a regular artist. And you know, in the beginning you play up the Voice thing and you know, and I put out an EP that was more mainstream, and was more geared towards the fans I'd made on the show. And you know, for me, it was great EP. I really like it. I really dug a lot of the songs. I think the songwriting on it was really great. Mm-hmm. But it took, you know, I knew that was going to go away. I knew the Voice, you know, the Voice popularity and all that stuff. Man, the next season comes out, you're just kind of old news. And so when I'd kind of made that realization, I was like, all right, well, what's the music I want to make? What, you know, what's my best thing that I got? What are my best songs that I got? Mm-hmm. And so I started working on that, about probably, I'd say about 6 months to a year after The Voice. And then thankfully,
which was 2016 running into 2017.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then thankfully, you know, kind of when all my money from The Voice had run out, Average Joe stepped in and I'd had about half the record done. They stepped in and helped pay for the rest of it.
Cool. Well, they say, you know, everybody's sort of first album is the culmination of their life experiences. You have, it seems to me, more than the average Joe, lots of styles on stage, lots of miles, lots of these experiences. Sort of what all came together from your life experience? That how did that feel infusing it into these recordings?
It's funny. The record as a whole was definitely more personal than I had expected it to be.
Oh,
and when I put it out, a lot of people were like, "Man, really just kind of hung some stuff out there, man." I was like, you know what? I didn't really think about it that way. And you know, and then when I kind of went back and listened to it, I was like, yeah, I kind of did just kind of air some stuff out. You know, I mean, I guess that's, depending on what genre you're in. I guess that's just all part of being a good songwriter.
And it's really part of country. Should
yeah.
be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the one thing about country music I love, is it's simple and it's to the point. And you know, one of my biggest things is, you know, I don't think there's a song on this record that, you know, anybody can't figure out what's going on. Anybody can't, you know, I'm not trying to weave in these, you know, gigantic metaphors that you have to pick through. I mean, it's pretty simple songwriting. You know, like a tune like Gods and Ghosts, you know, it sounds like it's kind of got a folk song thing to it, but the songwriting, I feel like, is very country oriented as far as just being really simple. Just, it's really just a conversation between a man and a woman, you know, who are close, you know, pretty much just like a husband and wife kind of thing. You know, just talking about how sometimes, you know, different guys are open, you know, guys aren't open books as much as women can be, you know, especially culturally. And, you know, we're not really, it's not really accepted as much for men to be open about their feelings and stuff. And that's just kind of the concept of that song, is like, you know, just because I'm not talking about stuff with you doesn't mean I'm not talking about stuff with God or, you know, in my case, talking to my dead brother. You know, or not even so much talking to him, but thinking about him and celebrating his life in my own way. You know, just because other people aren't involved doesn't mean I'm not doing that.
Well, simple and honest is what we seek out. We've certainly found it here. It's a wonderful record, and there's going to be more to come. But it's great to talk to you, Adam.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Craig.